Jason, we friends just having a conversation.
Welcome back to North Texas Music Fanatics. I am Jason Janik. I think, is this episode 16, not counting the mini episode? So we're moving along. Hopefully you've been enjoying them. I think what we should do, I'd love to hear some more from everybody. Analytics shows that we have roughly about 100 people listening each week, which I think is a lot of fun. It's still pretty small, makes it like a fun little club that we've got here, but it's big enough that I feel like we could have some interaction with y'all. You know, get on Instagram, NTXMF, and leave some comments, leave some questions that you might have for our guests. At some point, maybe I can have to where you can ask a question or two before I do the recording, and it can be a little more interactive for y'all. We'll figure that out. This is so super unprofessional and casual that I'm learning along with you. So get on Instagram, leave some comments, tell me what you want to see more of, tell me what you want to hear less of, which is probably my ums and ahs and weirdness, but that's cool. Oh, obviously, I'm going to mention it because I mention it every week, Patreon. Again, you can find us at NTXMF. We've got a $3 level. You know, if you want to give up a coffee a month, well, probably not even a coffee. Coffees are like $5. If you want to give up a soda, it would really help because we've got some equipment that we need to buy. I would love at some point to give a little money to PPT. That's the intro song that we use for each episode. I would love to thank them with more than just a thank you, and that Patreon could really help. So again, check that out. Go to Instagram and keep listening to us on deepelmradio.com and streaming through Amazon Music. All right, so this is going to be a good one. This is somebody that it seems like I run into, gosh, it's quite a bit. I saw her at the State Fair recently. I feel like I've seen her at maybe it was Lee Harvey's or somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, all your wonderful fun, more family-oriented posts on Facebook. There's a lot, and it's all really awesome, and I love what you do, and I think let's get to it. This is Amy Curno.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. So let's hear. I didn't realize, we had just talked for a second beforehand, I didn't realize that you didn't jump into the scene until 2001.
Yeah.
I thought you were here a little bit earlier, but, you know, it's my memory's not perfect. And I know we first met through Quick, probably like 2008-ish or whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. When I was doing the Shanghai Five thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also got to work with PPT a lot at that point,
yeah,
too. So I heard you say PPT a second ago, and I love them. So
yeah, yeah. It was such a fun little group, a fun little Quick community that we had going on, because Quick loved PPT. They did so much stuff with us. They were probably in the most issues of Quick out of anybody.
Oh, yeah.
But they brought in so many other people, and they worked, like you said, with you. They
such
worked with Glenn
energy.
Reynolds from Chomsky.
Guys.
And
oh,
just,
yeah, yeah. Glenn.
Yeah, just so much fun. I absolutely love those years because I met and got to know so many musicians and artists and DJs, and it was a good time.
That was definitely a special time.
Yeah.
For sure.
So let's go to your beginnings. You can go back as far as you want, but tell me how you got into music.
All right. Well, then I guess I have to go all the way back because my father is a composer. So
cool.
I was kind of born into music. I was always around it. My dad is James Curno, and he writes band music for wind ensembles, anybody that's played like a band instrument in the last 40 years, basically, has probably played his music. So he's kind of helped make music education what it is today. Like, all, if you go to any band director and say my dad's name, it's like, it's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, that's neat.
And my husband, Mark, has kind of coined the phrase, he's the Mick Jagger of the band world, because like, he's just really, really an awesome musician.
Well,
so I want to give him his props.
It's funny, too, because if we go to the education side of music, it's got its own entire little universe.
Yes, because
there are rock stars and superstars who choreograph marching band.
Oh yeah, and he was not into the choreographing part of it, but for a time when I was growing up, he was the director of the University of Illinois.
So he had a marching deal with
band,
that kind of
and my
stuff,
brother yeah. was in it, and so I grew up like in and around that world. I got to fly all over the country, going to bowl games, and
yeah.
it was cool. Yeah, so I grew up that way. Grew up in church music. I played trumpet for 9 years. I played piano. Started playing piano when I was 5. I started singing in choir and doing like church musicals and stuff. And I mean, from the time I was 3-4 years old, I was doing all that kind of stuff. And
that's
so
good.
They saw that in me. There's a tale they tell that when I was about 18 months old, my dad was running this solo and ensemble competition, and they're tuning up the trumpet player up on stage, and my mom had me in the back, and they hit that B flat, and I sang it out from the back.
Oh,
so they knew, like, at that point, oh, well, she's got an ear.
How are you on trumpet still?
Oh, no, I quit. Yeah, I didn't, well, I have to say, I didn't love the trumpet.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I didn't love it. My heart was really in singing. I don't know, I just always loved singing. And so.
Well, you got a great voice. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's my first love, really. And I grew up singing in choirs, and I even did a girls barbershop quartet. I just always loved singing in ensembles. And.
Well, that's good.
And the, you know, harmonizing with people and just being in and around that. I grew up with my mom and my aunt singing next to me in church, you know, singing harmony. So I always had that, you know, that ear, and just love being around that. So that being said, I just kept singing. I went to college for singing. I have a bachelor's and master's in vocal performance. And
where'd you go?
I went to the small private liberal arts college in Kentucky called Asbury College. At the time, it's now Asbury University.
Okay.
And then for my master's, I went to University of Kentucky. So I was right there. And I knew I wanted to sing, but I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do as far as singing. I was like, I just want to sing. And so I just kept studying my voice and like my craft and how to be better at that. And then,
did you do choir and stuff?
Oh yeah, so all through my master's degree, and I like when in my master's I was the choir assistant for the University of Kentucky choir, and then I was the TA there, and then I also ran the women's it was called Pause and Listen. It was the women's group.
Sure.
It was the elite little you know, audition only.
Are you into a cappella? Is that
I mean thing? I love it. I don't do it anymore.
I know some people like Pentatonix had made a career
out of it. Oh yeah, I mean, you have to be so
it.
Talented to be able to do that.
Sure.
And how to be able to harmonize like that, and just, you know, it's definitely its own little niche.
My favorite is probably, I think it was Rockapella, because of Carmen
oh, yeah.
San Diego.
Yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. And another thing, I grew up listening to those kinds of groups as well, so it helped my ear develop.
Oh yeah, sure.
You know, but back in it was more like in the 70s and 80s. You know, listening to this group called Singers Unlimited.
Oh, okay.
That was all a cappella, and they were like studio musicians in the 70s that came together and did these awesome a cappella harmonic. You know.
I've got somewhere, I think they're out of Austin from the 80s. It was an a cappella group that put out, I think, 2 albums. I can't even remember the name. I just know because, you know, I dig for a lot of vinyl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I ran across it, and I saw it was a Texas label. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I know that existed here, the pop side of a cappella.
How interesting.
It's obviously its own little niche.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, singing in choirs and stuff, I definitely appreciate
it. I don't think there's
appreciate
been too much a cappella down in Deep Ellum over the years.
Oh, no. Yeah, so after I finished my master's degree, that was in Kentucky, right? And so I made my way towards Texas. And the whole time I was doing my master's degree, I was also, and my bachelor's degree, I was also singing in a band. And so I was doing more. It was kind of jazzy. I've kind of always kind of been in that jazzy vein. But
and this was still in Kentucky?
This was in Kentucky, yeah. So I was in this band with my brother-in-law at the time, and he was an art professor at the college that I was attending. And but he was also this really cool jazz musician, and he had this hybrid guitar that he made. It was like a classical acoustic guitar that he had sanded off the frets on the top three strings and made it a fretless bass and put bass strings on the top. And so he's like playing guitar and bass at the same time. It's real funky sound. And then we would have a drummer and me singing, and it was very interesting. And
was it mostly like supper clubs type stuff, or were there
proper we played coffee clubs? Houses, okay, yeah. And that kind of, we played a lot of coffee houses and those kinds of things. And then it was mostly that kind of stuff.
So then when you moved here to Texas, you already had a feel for what you can do on stage, and you did you attack it pretty quick?
I knew no one when I moved to Dallas, like no one. And then the scene I was in at that time was more like the tattoo scene. And so I was down in Deep Ellum. I immediately came to Deep Ellum when I moved to Dallas. And so that helped.
Sure.
And I was working at like Moda. I don't know if you remember that place, the clothing store. So yeah. I started working at Moda, and then I started working my way through the restaurants down there and some of the tattoo shops I worked at. And then
back then there was still Tiggers. And
It was Ace in the Hole was the first one, and then Paradise. Those were the ones that I worked at. And then I also started bartending at Elm Street Bar. So I was there, and that's where I started meeting the musicians when I started bartending. And so that's how I ended up ultimately meeting Mark. And I also met an Expo Lounge. That was another one down in Expo Park. I met Greg Prickett that way, and that's how I got into the whole Shanghai Five thing there. So I was at a birthday party at Expo Lounge with someone I had met that I was a friend with at Ace and the Hole Tattoos. And so we were having this birthday party at Expo Lounge, and Greg's little jazz band was playing there. And I was like, I hadn't really sung much in Dallas at all, like at all. And so just went up to him and they stopped playing. I was like, can I sing? You know, and I'm sure like everyone is like, you can sing whatever. I was like, please, I promise you, let me just sing a song. So I was like, I know Summertime, let's do Summertime. And so I ended up doing Summertime with him. And then he was like, okay, you need to meet Bill Longhorse. And so that's how that whole connection started.
Yeah,
and
that's cool. Yeah. It's got to help too with jazz. There's standards.
Yes.
So you can
already knew something. Yeah. And I knew what key and everything, you know. And I was like, give me Summertime and C, you know. Yeah. So.
It's not like walking up to your random Deep Ellum band.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, that makes sense.
And so that was my first foray into singing here, and then we ended up playing at Sambuca, and that was the first place I ever played at Sambuca.
The one down in Deep Ellum?
Deep Ellum,
so. That was, what was the name of the really tall door guy? It's been too long.
I know.
I love seeing him out there. That was just great.
He was awesome. I wish I could remember.
I know somebody listening right now is like, how can you forget that?
I know. And please refresh our memories.
I never went into Sambuca when it was there,
mm-hmm.
but when they moved over to, what was that, Pearl or something over there, right on the other
McKinney.
Side.
We played there all the time, yeah.
I went in there a few times because the Dallas Morning News covered some stuff. I shot Roy Hargrove performing. Was great.
Yeah.
I, at the time, I didn't realize that, you know, he was from Texas. I just knew that he was a big name around the country and around the world. So it was
right
really,
here in Dallas.
Yeah, really neat getting to shoot him. So, I mean, eventually you expand past jazz, right?
Well, yeah, because I kind of have always just sung everything, really. Jazz was my love, but like I grew up singing pop in church and that kind of stuff, and singing to tracks in front of people. That's, you know, I did all kinds of, like before karaoke was a thing.
Sure.
You know, I was in front of my congregation at church. I seriously grew up singing in church, you know.
Well, it makes sense then why when I first met you, I believe it was when you dressed up as Madonna for the Halloween issue.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, and Reed was Bowie.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
was fun. Reed Robinson.
speaking of Reed, so you get into Shanghai Five, mm-hmm, right? Is that that's your first pop band?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then, oddly enough, we got voted best jazz band in 2007 by Dallas Observer.
That's fun.
So I guess they just didn't know where to put us. So
yeah.
That's where, and we were playing.
Well, it is jazzy.
Yeah, and we were playing, you know, Sambuca, and we were playing Torelli's all the time. So we were playing the jazzy-ish clubs, you know. So, but yeah, definitely more rock pop sensibilities in that. With Bill, he has that, I don't know, just. He has this sense of really 60s pop, too, you know, lush orchestrations.
Dallas has had a long history of that. even if you look back to Rubber Bullet, and you've got somebody like Earl Harvin.
Mm-hmm. And Earl and Bill.
Yeah.
Good friends there.
And there's a number of bands, or even like Bob Goblin, where you've mm-hmm. got, you know, Rob is super accomplished jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it kind of makes sense that you would fit in here.
Yeah, it was really a blessing, you know, I got here and didn't know anybody and pretty much immediately was accepted into the music scene. So
yeah.
was, you know, very lucky about that.
So. Well, I think what we should do then, because I'd love to hear more about Shanghai Five, why don't we go ahead and we'll play a song, and then when we get back, we will discuss that. Sound
right.
good?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, so let's play this. right, that brought back some memories. So let's discuss Shanghai Five. Like you said, you guys, you know, played around. You played at Sambuca. I saw the name quite a bit, and then I met you through Quick shortly after. Tell me more about the band.
Well, let's see. So I met Greg, and he was actually our bass player. I met him through singing at that Expo Lounge thing. And then he introduced me to Bill Longhorse, who is a guitar player. So when I met and I sang for Bill, we just decided to form a band. And it was Bill and Greg. And at the time, we had Domingo Leija. I don't know if you remember him or not. He was our first drummer. He was our first drummer. We actually went through a lot of drummers and had a kind of changeover in our rhythm section quite a bit. But the core members were Bill, Greg, and I, and then Reed as well, Reed Robinson. And so we kind of had like an electronic thing going on with Reed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He played the computer. He had some, like, they would do like sample, he and Bill would do like sample tracks and build beds, I guess. And then we would kind of play with, along with that. And so it was a different kind of thing that I don't know. I'd definitely never done anything like that before, you know. But very, I'd say jazz, like jazz influence, but pop for sure, like more 60s pop, kind of big wall of sound type thing, I guess. Yeah. And so then we'd play at most of jazz clubs, but we'd also play at Double Wide and Lee Harvey's a lot. And we'd throw these big parties where we'd do like costume type themes, and our fans would come out all dressed up, and it was kind of this weird little cult following that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to connect with fans and keep them coming back, because I know, you know, with Baboon, they'd always have people in the audience with whistles that would play along with the song.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
keep them involved.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many bands like that where when you connect with your fans in a special way, they want to come back.
Yeah, and they'd want to come back and show all out with their costumes. Yeah. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. We did a lot of those Halloween costume parties at Lee Harvey's. We did them with PPT, so that was fun. And then in turn, I got to do some collaborating with PPT on some of their stuff too.
Yeah, I've worked with them so many times over the years. I think I only got to see them live twice. Both times, I was floored.
Mm-hmm.
As soon, you know, I mean, they play around and they're fun, and they were such great guys to be in a room with
and just
goof around with. And especially since
I loved hanging out with them.
Yeah, but then to see them get on stage and change into these completely new, just polished professional
entertainers.
Yeah,
really.
It's crazy how somebody can have two sides. And I'm sure you've seen it with a lot of musicians.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, all the time.
Are you that way too? I mean, because I know when we talk, you're kind of casual and you're laid back and really easygoing. But on the stage, especially now when I see you, you really know how to command the audience.
Yeah, there is this dual kind of personality thing that does happen, because I feel like one of my favorite things, I don't know if it's obvious to you or not, but it is to me, that is performing. Performing is what makes me tick, right? But it's also a lot of energy. So I'm expending all this energy. And so when I get off stage, if I'm home, I'm like,
yeah, you're spent.
Yeah. And I'm like a homebody. I like to be at home. I love to be at home when I can, you know? But then if I get the chance to be on stage, I'm in. Like, give me an audience. Right? I love it. So it's fun for me. So
you mentioned PPT. Who else did you play with? Who did you share stage with?
Oh, well, so we got to do this little, I don't know if it's a tour. We went on a trip, and Reed set it up so we could actually be a part of PBS Road Trip Nation. I don't know if you remember that show or not, but we did interviews during the day on our way from Dallas. We went to Phoenix. We went to San Diego. We went to LA. We went to San Francisco. We went to Vegas. And we went to Denver, and then we came back here. And so we did this interviews all the way through, and then played at night and all these shows. And so when we went through Vegas, we got to play with and meet Wayne Newton. We played at the Flamingo Hotel there and met George Wallace and got to interview him there as well, and as J.J. Walker. So that was pretty interesting, fun.
Yeah, I would say so.
Oh, That's the first thing that just popped in my mind. Let me think.
Why does it not surprise me that Reed set that up? Because it seems
perfect, right?
Everything he does is some sort of fanciful project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the way he just transitioned now into this whole, like, alcohol-free movement, you know? Like,
but it's great. Huh? I mean, it seems like people are really gravitating towards it.
Oh, yeah, I think
and
there's a need for it right now.
His big movie nights that he was doing.
That was perfect during COVID and how he made that work and still had a sense of community, even though we were all, you know, trying to maintain distance, right?
Shanghai Five, have we missed any fun or
oh,
cool
I'm sure
details?
We had so many kinds of antics in those few short years we were together. Lots of big personalities in that band that butted heads, and ultimately we ended up not making it right as a band. So I think we broke up around 2008, and right around that, I had already been working at Zounds. So let me back up a little bit.
Sure.
Actually,
well, let me ask you this. I know I've got the one CD. Did you guys just put out the one album?
Yeah, so we only officially put out one album, but there is another one out there that never got released, and so maybe one day we can get that released. Also, Bill has been working on a solo record, and he's put some of those songs on his solo stuff too, just so they don't die,
yeah,
I guess.
Cool.
You know? So, yeah. And I also sang on his solo record, did background vocals and things on it too. So yeah, we've amended and we're friends now again. But yeah, there were some tumultuous times with us and as we broke up. So, but now, you know, in our older age, we're all buddies, and we actually just played together a few months ago, or a month ago or so, at Double Wide again.
Oh, that's great.
Under his solo name, The Immaculates is what he does that with. Yeah. So when I used to work in Deep Ellum at Elm Street Bar, I was just bartending there. I had some weird shifts, but like I was there like Tuesdays, and I was there all day. I would open at 3 and be there till 3 in the morning, and that was my day, you know, and I would do everything. I had no help, basically. Pretty dangerous, actually, too, now that I think back on it.
Yeah.
And so I'd have these regulars that would come in on my day, you know, and see me. And one of my regulars was Rob Schumacher, who was in Ghoul Town and a lot of other bands, but that was the big one, you know. And he found out that I had a master's degree in voice, and he was like, "We need to come meet Mark Solomon over at Zound Sounds. I teach at Zound Sounds, so we need a voice teacher. Come check it out and meet Mark. I bet, you know, it would probably be a good fit." And so one day I just decided to go down to the old building, which was on Haskell between Live Oak and Swiss. And he just happened to be there, which he usually isn't there during the day teaching. But he just happened to be there. And so I walked up to the building, and the numbers on the building are 1203. Well, my birthday is December 3rd. So I was like, you know, like, it was like, maybe something's meant to be here, right? So I walked in, and he happened to be there. I didn't think anything of it. We met, we talked. He's like, "Okay, well, cool, you can have a job. Let's try this out." So we met, and I mean, I started working there and just teaching a few lessons and then building up my schedule. And then my husband at the time got a job in Oklahoma City. And so we moved to Oklahoma City, and this was 2005, 2006, something like that. And this was like in the height of Shanghai Five, too.
Sure.
And so I would come back like every weekend and play in Shanghai Five. And then, but that didn't actually last that long. We stayed there only for like 6 months and then ended up coming back. And when I came back, I was asked to sing the national anthem at a roller derby competition, bout, whatever it's called. Remember those things? It was big back then, right? Zound Sounds just happened to have a band playing at that bout, and it was called Children of the Grave. It was a Sabbath cover band or tribute, whatever, you know. And Rob was there, and then Mark was there. And so Mark saw me sing the national anthem, and Mark at the time had just found out he had polyps and couldn't sing or really talk, actually. He was supposed to be in vocal rest for like 6 months at the time. And so his singing career was basically over at the time. You know, he had to rest. And so we decided, he found out that I was back, and so we decided to start a band. And then I decided I'd go back and start teaching there again at Zounds. And so I ended up going back to Zounds and teaching, and then we formed Charming Gardeners with some of the other teachers there at Zounds too. And at the time it was Wade Kofer was our bass player. And actually our very first bass player was Brandon Smith.
Okay.
Do you remember Brandon Smith?
I don't. I'd probably recognize the face. Was he in some other stuff?
Oh, he was in lots of other stuff and stopped playing. And so that's probably why you don't remember. But in the 90s, he was in a lot. Oh, and I'm kicking myself not remembering the name of the band, but I'll figure it out in a minute. And then Wade Kofer played bass for us, and he taught for us at Zounds as well. And those beginning days, I think Gerald Irigori also played. Yeah. Wade Kofer was our second one, and then we had Gerald Irigori on drums for a while. But then we decided we had this little management company for a while, and they booked us a trip to New York and back, and Gerald didn't want to go. So we had Ross Martinez played with us for that trip, and that was a lot of fun. His dad was had a music guild director at Booker T at the time too. Louis Martinez. So
that's a good place to be,
right? And Ross had graduated from Booker T as well, so we knew he was a kid drummer. Yeah. So he went to New York and back with us, and then basically Mark and I have stayed the two main people in that band over the years, and ever since that trip, we never really went on another trip after that. And Gerald and Kinley Wolf is our bass player now, and Gerald is our drummer again. So it's the four of us, and we've always just been playing, man, I guess, since that's 2024 now. So that was 2008, I guess, when we first got together as a band. We've been together a long time.
Where all do you play?
Well, Lee Harvey's has always been a big one for me. I've buddies with Seth Smith, the owner, and I worked at Lee Harvey's for a very long time as well. And then, so Shanghai Five used to play there, so that's always just been like kind of our home bar. We love playing that place. And Mark and I actually, we do a lot of these little duo gigs where it's just the two of us, which is fun, where we end up doing like little restaurants and things like that.
Yeah, I know I've seen you at least a couple of times as the two of you.
Yeah, and then like we've done that at the state fair a few times. Actually, at the fair this last time, that was fun because the first two sets, well, we got there and they changed the stage from before when we had played there, and they had built this big old stage.
Yeah.
And so the first two sets, Mark and I just played as the duo, and then, but as soon as we got there, we saw the big stage and we're like, well, can we call our band? And so by the last two sets, we had the rest, the rhythm section.
Well,
there.
That's good.
So yeah, so
I like what they've done with it, because as you know, you used to play underneath that little tree, or right in front of the tree.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a little gazebo kind of thing.
And I mean, it was cute, but the proper stage works a lot better.
Yeah, it was great, and people like to hang out there for a while. We had one guy sit, he was from Nashville, and when we first started setting up, it was just Mark and I, the duo thing, and he was a little skeptical, and he was like, you see people, I don't know, he just was skeptical, whatever. And then he heard us play, and he ended up loving it, and he stayed, and he heard, like, he stayed for all, or kept coming back for every set, and he heard all the sets, and heard the sets with the band, too, and, you know, it was like, it's just fun, you never know who you're gonna reach.
Well, there are so many duos like that, where you've got the girl on vocals and the guy on keyboards or bass or whatever, it falls flat. Or it's like background music or blah. You know, you're drinking your coffee or whatever. You could take it or leave it. So I understand his skepticism.
Yeah, right.
Especially if he's from Nashville.
Oh, yeah, because everybody's a musician there.
I mean, I've never seen you have a performance and not just be, wow, that is some great stuff.
Thank you.
So you played the state fair. How many years do you think?
I think we've done it 3 or 4 years in a row. The COVID year was a little off.
Yeah. I know Tammy takes care of that.
She does now. Before that, Trey Johnson was doing all that.
Exactly.
And so our buddy Trey really helped us out and hooked us up with that, the state fair experience, and we're really grateful to him and everybody over at State Fair that help us, like Scott Davis too, he's our buddy, and we actually taught his kid in Zound Sounds, and so we've known him forever.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've loved what they've been doing, because I shoot the fair every year for different publications, and I've been going since I was four or yeah, since, I think since I was four. And nice. I've never missed a year, and I've always enjoyed the music I saw there.
Mm-hmm.
But the stage that's right there by the food in the midway, for years and years, I was like, well, it's okay, but it's state fair music. Mm-hmm. They've really, over the last, especially 5 years, really taken it to something more diverse Texas, more oh, yeah. modern Texas, more totally. Fun, like you'd actually want to sit there and listen in Texas.
Trying to curate a yeah. more diverse thing. It's not just country here in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. So,
although I did sing in a country outfit for a little bit when since I've been here. I've been in Texas for 23 years now, 22 years or whatever. But yeah, I did sing in a country outfit for part of that. Yeah, I had to.
What did you think of it?
That was fun. It was Donny Ray Ford and the Widowmakers.
Okay.
Donny Ray has been in a lot of different conglomerations of bands over the years too. I don't know that he's playing much anymore, but he's definitely a character. And so the funny thing would be, it was basically almost Shanghai Five, and then Donny Ray would take over, and he became the singer songwriter, and we would back him up. And so I would sing harmonies and play tambourine, and it was definitely interesting.
Sounds like a good time. Uh-huh. Well, so let's go ahead and take a break, and it just makes sense to hear. Well, you mentioned Charming Gardeners, so why don't we kick into a song from that?
All right.
Yeah, that was definitely good. I know that, like I said, you know, I The Charming Gardener stuff I've heard a lot more live. I've already said it a few times, but every time I see you up on stage, it's just, it's good stuff.
And hopefully you can tell I'm doing what I love.
Well, that's what I was going to segue into it. It makes sense that you're able to give that to new generations through what you're doing here at Sound Sounds. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So when I was younger, like I said, I wanted to sing. I just wanted to sing. I wanted to sing. That's all I wanted to do was sing. And my dad always told me, oh, you'd be a good teacher. And I was like, no way. I don't want to be a teacher. I'm never going to be a teacher.
Did you ever take teaching classes? I know that you said that you were the assistant up there. So you had to have...
So I had to take like a vocal pedagogy type class in when I was getting my master's degree. So yes, I had to learn how to teach voice lessons, but it's not really what I wanted to do. And then as soon as I graduated, I moved to Little Rock for a year and a half, and I ended up getting a little job at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, and I just taught my first few voice lessons there. And then I realized it wasn't so bad. And then when I moved to Dallas and the whole thing happened with me finding Sound Sounds and starting to teach there, I really started to enjoy it. Yeah, I did. And I really found out that I was a really good teacher, too. So it's kind of just been passed down, actually. You know, my father being a composer, he's also an educator. He's a teacher. He grew up teaching. I grew up with him teaching my whole life. You know, my mother also, she's an artist, but she was also an art educator. So she taught art in schools. It's basically in my blood as well. Not only is the music in my blood, but the teaching is in my blood, too. So
does it tap a more analytical side of you?
Yes, it does, because I have to be very, I just have to be scientific, because the things that I teach are very scientific. And I have to explain musculature, and I have to explain how to use that musculature. And so I'm very into technique and having people use their bodies as their instruments and using their bodies in the right way so they don't hurt themselves. And so I'm really into that, and I could talk forever about all of that too.
Was there more of a thought process like that in your bands when you were kind of creating your music, or did it seem to just kind of flow out of nowhere?
Yeah, so the musical process has been different for me, because growing up classically trained, for the most part, you know, when you're like that, the music just is given to you, and you play what's in front of you, you know? And so I never really explored much of my own songwriting. I have written songs. I have written songs, and we actually play a few of them in our Charming Gardeners sets.
Are most kind of your all songs from that, are they Mark?
Yeah, the Charming Gardeners ones, I'd say the majority are Mark's, but there are a few that we... quite a few that we've written together. Like, that's how we started the band. We started writing together. And then, but then he's just more prolific. He'll just sit down and, like, there'll be a song written, and then I'll sing it, and then it works, you know? But sometimes, like, he'll leave out a verse or something, and then I'll finish it or something like that. And then there are a few songs that, like, I've written that are just my songs that I brought to the band and we play, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I'm not as prolific. I just feel like, I don't know, everything, the music was always just there, and they were like, here, sing this, and so I sang it. And then when I got in Shanghai 5, Bill was there, and he had all these songs, and he was kind of writing for me, and he kind of calls me his muse. And so it was really nice to have that aspect of it, is like I was inspiring these songs for him to write, and he was writing for my voice, so I never really had to write, which kind of at the end became a point of contention, oddly enough.
Same time, it, like you said, it can be a great outlet. When you can't maybe take on the character that song needs yourself, and you find somebody who can, it's very inspiring.
Oh, yeah, and I love being the interpreter. That's part of what I've always done as a singer, is I'm not just singing because I am not the writer. I am the person's voice who wrote it, and I am the interpreter, and I want to be able to convey that to the audience. So it's probably my musical theater background as well.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's the same in theater, where you can have a screenplay, and then the director takes, and they have to not only respect the voice of the person who wrote the screenplay, but then they have to inject what they feel is needed, right? And then you've got the actor who then injects what they feel is needed. And by the time it's all done, you've got this wonderful, big, vibrant, new entity.
Yeah, piece of art.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a conglomeration, or, you know, amalgamation of everybody's work together.
Yeah. So back to Zound Sounds, because you've got private lessons here, but then you guys also, I guess, encourage like group efforts, right? Because I've seen some of where you guys have the showcase.
Yeah. So that's kind of one of our crown jewels of our program is the band program, because we put the kids together. Not only do we do the private lessons and we teach them how to do what they do, because we're big into technique here and we want people to be good at what they do before we just throw them in a band. You know, it's not a prerequisite, but we love it, you know, if they actually could play their instruments before they get in a band, right? And so then we group kids together, and a lot of times these bands kind of stay together. Like we've got one band, and they're called the Holy Mops, and they've been together for 3 years. They've been playing, you know. We have bands that like we formed years ago. So Sound Sounds has been
quite a while.
I think for 18 years. Yeah. We just celebrated our 18th anniversary at the Granada. Actually, we had a huge, 7-hour program there. We started around 5 and was finished around 12:30 or so. Yeah. You know, and so we had alumni from the past 18 years plus a lot of our current kids too. Which, by the way, a lot of them all go to Booker T now, and then a lot of our alumni are actually Booker T alumni as well. So, and I actually teach at Booker T as well. So
that must have been fun little backstage green room with 18 years worth of people,
all the different generations, and so a lot of the people that are, you know, the first round of Zounds kids are not kids, they're in their 30s, they're out there being professional musicians. So it's really fun, inspiring, amazing, whatever adjective, to see all these people grow up and keep doing it.
I don't know if it was a Zound Sounds, but I know that I was walking down in Deep Ellum one day, and I think there was an afternoon performance at Three Links.
We did one recently at Three Links.
Well, then that must have been y'all.
And it was spilling out the doors. Yeah. Like, you couldn't get in. It was amazing.
So I would imagine so. Especially, you know, for somebody who is at that point where we all were once, you know, where you're, you know, 16, 17, 18, and you're realizing that music can be more than just what you hear through your headphones or on your radio.
Be a part of it.
Exactly. And they get to see and taste and smell what it really is like.
The way they want it too, you know, like the way, I'm not discounting the way I grew up. I love everything about my upbringing and my musical upbringing for sure. Like, I had a amazing musical education. But if I would have had this growing up.
Oh, yeah.
I never even thought to start singing and playing piano together for a very long time in my life. It's just because, I don't know, as a classical musician, it's more you learn something, one thing really, really well, and you do that one thing really, really well, you know? And then when I walked into Zounds, I was, one, the only woman, and two, the only one that could only do one thing very well. Everyone else was, it was Chris Holt, who could play every single instrument really well.
Yes.
It was Chad Stockslager that could play, he's an amazing piano player, but he can also play every other instrument.
Yeah.
It was Adam Cole. You know, there's just this list of Paul Averett, of amazing musicians that I was working with. And I walked in there and I was like, oh, wow, I need to learn how to do more stuff. Right. And so then I started up in my game and playing piano more, and, you know, which I love. I love being able to accompany myself, you know. Well, and then so I started doing that with all my students really early on, because then no one did that with me as I was.
No, that makes sense. I mean, the more that you can learn, the earlier, the better.
Yes, when they're sponges.
I played trumpet in school from fifth
till senior year. Ah, that's why the trumpet question.
Year. Yeah, no, it just piqued my interest. But the point I bring that up is that I didn't start trying to play guitar until I was, I think, like 21.
Mm-hmm.
And even by that point, I was like, okay, I can learn it, but I don't think I'll be able to master it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did too. So when I moved here to Dallas, I got a guitar. And then I was kind of going through a hard time with my ex at the time. And I just started, all these songs came out of me.
Yeah.
As soon as I got a guitar, like, I wrote all these songs. I'm like, where do those come from? You know?
But I think, to your point, is that if you learn early enough several things, it's a lot easier to pick up that new thing. Because I know John Pettigo, we were talking, I had gotten a banjo. And I was like, okay, you know, how'd you learn banjo? And he was like, you know what? I watched like 2 or 3 YouTube videos, And I was doing it in 3 months.
He just picked it up. Yeah.
But it's because he's had that.
He was already musical like that. He already played a stringed instrument like that. So, and that's kind of the thing with all those guys that at that early generation of Zound Sounds, you know, all of those guys could play, pick up pretty much any instrument and play. And it was intimidating, but also inspiring at the same time. It made me want to work harder and be a better musician.
So if you're listening out there and you have a kid that you think would like music, you need to get them into as much as you can now. It'll be a lot better, a lot easier for them.
Yeah.
And I think I know of a place where they could learn.
I wonder where.
So I should speak, because we're over here at Zound Sounds recording this, and it's over here in the Lake Highlands area.
Old Lake Highlands.
Yeah.
On Shoreview.
So pretty easy to find. As far as Dallas is concerned, I would call this centrally located to a lot of spaces.
Yeah. It is, actually. It's kind of in between North Dallas and East Dallas as well, so it's pretty easy to get to.
So let's discuss this then. We've mentioned that, you know, Charming Gardeners is out there playing still. I saw you guys the last time at the State Fair. We mentioned about how you are getting your students, I'd hate to say kids, because I'm sure you've got some adult students, right?
Oh, I do, actually, yeah.
So how some of your students have been up on stage recently.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you've seen, or who are some of the people that you've seen recently on stage that have really excited you?
Oh, so actually we have just started doing a little music series here at our space on the B-side. The other side of our space is called the B-side. And we have our buddy Simon Pruitt running this little music series called Nocturnes, and last Friday night I heard this guy named Sam Cormier, and I was blown away. I am in love with this kid. Basically, I feel like everyone needs to hear his music. He's really soulful. Kind of remind me a little bit of Jeff Buckley. Just I don't know. He's just really charming. Got a lot of stage presence. Talks. He does these looping things, but it's not boring where you're sitting there waiting for 5 minutes for him to set up
to
the
build
loop.
It up.
He's like talking the whole time and engaging the
That's
audience.
Good.
And he's just a really charming fellow. And I really hope you could hear some of his music. He was great. I was blown away.
I've seen a few people over the years that have built up some really fun live songs using a looper. I've always wanted to buy one. But again, then I think it's going
to
sit right next to my other pedals.
All your other pedals.
And my guitar that I never use, because the best I can do is bang out a few chords.
Mm-hmm.
But
and it's hard to find time to do all
it
that,
is.
You know?
But I love the idea that one person can take an instrument or a couple things just around them and build an entire song right
sound
there
effects.
Live.
Yeah. Like he was using sound effects and stuff. And then for most of the show, he didn't have a rhythm section. But then at the end, he brought up, for like the last maybe 4 or 5 songs, he brought up a rhythm section. And it was just beautiful. And even one of the songs, he broke it down. He just took a guitar into the middle of the room, in the middle of the crowd. And I mean, so it was just a really cool experience.
I know you said Jeff Buckley-esque.
More soul.
Well,
too,
that's what I was going to ask is what other areas did it touch? Because I know loopers, especially for shoegaze bands, is a big thing. Because you can create that kind of droning, wonderful, repetitive thing.
But his stuff wasn't... It was weird because he would start with like this electronic sound that didn't change. It was just the sound wave almost that would go through the whole thing. But he would change chords over top of it, and somehow it wove itself through and it worked.
Well, that's cool.
Pretty magical,
actually. Have you played around with them? Effects like that?
I haven't, and I've actually thought about it before too, because I'm only one person and I love to sing harmonies and things like that too, so I have definitely
that be
thought
the
about that. Yeah.
That I would got, be fun. I saw, do you remember Nick Acosta?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I shot her for the news at Trees, and her guitarist was setting up. He had a whole row of pedals.
I'm sure,
but he puts this one on. It blew me away that I was like, man, that sound is gorgeous, what you're doing there. And so, you know, he was still kind of tuning. So I was able to get his attention. I was like, hey, you know, what pedal is that? And I think it was a Boss SYB3. It's a bass guitar pedal.
Pedal.
But he found a way to use it and create these just amazing sounds from it in his own way. And so I've always loved what you could do with different effects. And I know there's a lot that you can do with vocals because, you know, Stephen Holt?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So his current band, I Love You, he's got effects that he can put on his vocals that,
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. I can't even explain it. Just what he's able to do with his voice through, you know, a couple little effects. You've got to do it.
How interesting. Yeah. I'll definitely check that out.
So we're getting near the end.
Oh.
There's so much more to talk about too. especially I love the stuff that we've been talking about with Zound Sounds, because what you're doing for new generations of music is really exciting.
Thank you.
You know, this podcast goes back and reminisces so much about 90s Deep Ellum and the early 2000s North Texas music, but I'm still blown away by the stuff that I'm finding that's new.
Me too.
And it's easy to get in that trap where you're like, okay, well, that was my time. That was my music. I'm just going to listen to that.
There's no good music coming back, coming out now.
Exactly. But there will always be new music.
I'm always blown away. And the kids are great for bringing that to me as well and introducing me to the new stuff and keeping me young in that way.
Yeah, exactly. So I could sit here and talk about that for forever. But like I said, I know that that we got to wrap this up. Our listeners are probably ready to go on to their next podcast or whatever. So I appreciate you having me over here. It was fun
so
to talk
much
about
for
all that.
Thank you so
And just thinking back about the fun photos that we did for Quick and getting to see you on stages, and especially even just running into you. I was up at the State Fair shooting for D Magazine, and there you were.
Oh, yeah, you didn't expect that, huh?
Yeah, it just, I mean, from a mile away, I could recognize the voice.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
I was like, I got to go over there and take a few photos. It was good. all right, so we're going to officially say goodbye now. Check out our Instagram. It'll be even better if you check out our Patreon. And we will have somebody here next week to do the same fun stuff with. But for today, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
We need to pick a song to go out on.
All right.
So we played Shanghai. We played Charming Gardeners. What else North Texas related would be something that you'd want us to go out on? Is there a project that you've worked on, or is there a band that's really just inspired you? Who here in North Texas would you say was your muse? Who got you anxious to do more?
Wow.
It's easy for me.
That's a good question.
As a professional photographer, not only can I draw from other photographers who are doing great work, but I can change sounds into images, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I can hear a great new band, and it can inspire me to make some sort of other, like, visual creation. I mean,
guard out of it, huh?
Who do you think? Who here inspires you?
Well, I have to say that one of my former students is really killing it right now. And
do they have something recorded that we can play?
You ever heard of Rose Garden Funeral Party?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, Leah Lane.
That would be a great one to go out
on. Yeah, Leah Lane is definitely an inspiration and a hard worker, and she's just won a bunch of music awards.
Exactly.
Didn't she? Yeah.
I've seen the name quite a bit. So
that
sounds great. Well, let me pull up that catalog, and let's go out on this song here. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you,
Amy.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
Please tune in next week.